Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show with your hosts, Phil Huff and Julie Calamine. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Phil. How have you been?
Oh, I'm wonderful. It feels like winter now with the colder temperatures, a little bit of freezing up outside on the driveway.
True, but I will take winter sun over winter gloom.
Oh, it's nice and sunny, but the cold days and cold nights are setting up some nice snow, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that with our guest, Jeff Thompson, today from the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center.
Yes.
Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
First, we're going to talk a little bit about the weather coming up for the week, though. Today, it's going to be cold, a high of 28 degrees, but mostly sunny. Patchy fog in the morning, and then possibly we'll get up to 30 degrees today. Overnight low tonight, 17 to 20, so time to bundle up. Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, mostly sunny all day. Some occasional patchy fog, highs in the mid-30s, low 30s, overnights in the high teens to the low 20s. So more coming up of what we've been experiencing the last day or so.
And if anyone's driven by Schweitzer and looked up, it is getting awfully snowy up there, looking pretty.
Now, is the ice setting up nice enough for some ice fishing? Not quite yet, but soon enough?
Not my category, but I do have to admit, last week I said I was nearly done fishing, and I went again last week, Phil. Probably the last time, though.
Well, there's winter sports, and that's what we're here to talk about with Jeff. And welcome back to the show, Jeff.
It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about what's happening at the Avalanche Center these days.
Well, right now is a really busy time. As you said, the snow is setting in, and I was up at Schweitzer yesterday. We put a video out on our Facebook site. And if you watched that, you saw how good the snow really is. So we're really ramping up with education and forecasting. Our first forecast is going to come out this Thursday. You can check us out on IdahoPanhandleAvalanche.org for that information. So it's good. Good start to the season.
So for those listeners who are new to the area, tell us a little bit about the history of the Panhandle Avalanche Center, how it came to be, what the big picture mission is.
Sure. The Avalanche Center started in the early 90s, and it started in Coeur d'Alene. Two Forest Service Rangers kind of realized the need to forecast for avalanches. And I believe it started mostly with a phone-in type forecast where they would make a video or a phone recording of here are the conditions out there, and you could call in and get those conditions. And it was for recreationalists, but it was also for other people that were using the backcountry hunters and line workers and lots of different folks. These days it's primarily recreational use, but kind of interesting back then that there were a lot more people crawling into the woods that maybe weren't recreationalists.
And what is the current relationship with the Forest Service?
The Avalanche Center is a U.S. Forest Service Avalanche Center. So we're one of 13 avalanche centers that are a function of the U.S. Forest Service. So a lot of our funding comes from the Forest Service, and we're housed in the Forest Service building over on Ontario Street.
And so there's a long history of it, but things have changed nowadays. A lot of the information you're putting out there is available on the internet, social media, websites, and such?
Correct, especially with the weather. I found, I've been doing this for a while, and I found that with technology these days and social media, that folks have a lot of the information that we use right at their fingertips as well. So it's our interpretation of that weather and what it does to the snowpack that's really important. It's using those forecasts and using those models and going out and saying, well, this is what we think is going to happen to the snowpack based on what we're seeing.
And so for folks listening, if they want to find out, but they have not quite yet discovered your Facebook page, tell us about how they can get to the Facebook page and website.
Well, if you're on Facebook, you can search us, Friends of Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center, and that really seems to be a great avenue for us these days. I posted a video yesterday and already have 2,000 views on it. So it's been a great avenue for us. I think folks these days, a lot of what they want to see is on their way to the trailhead, pull up a video, watch it, get some great, good information, just quick. Here's the snowpack, here's what it's doing, and go from there. Our website has also been a great avenue for us. We started that last March. It's a brand new website. We're still working some of the bugs out, but for the most part, it's good to go. And we're going to, like I said, Thursday, put out our first forecast of the season.
Jeff, why don't you tell us a little bit more about your organization, the number of folks that work there, and your backgrounds, how long you've all been with the organization?
Sure. Well, Kevin Davis, he's kind of the backbone of our organization. He's been around for a long time. Anybody who's been in the snow world and in the panhandle probably knows Kevin. He's been the director. He works for the Forest Service. He's a hydrologist for the Forest Service. Eric Morgan, he's our other forecaster up in this region. He's a firefighter for the Forest Service and an avalanche forecaster. And then we also have a Forest Service forecaster out of the Coeur d'Alene office, Melissa Hendrickson. And she started with us last year. And so she forecasts kind of our southern region, the St. Joe Lookout Pass area. And then there's myself. And I joined last year. I came from Colorado, spent 20 years in Colorado working in the snow, and decided to relocate up to here with my family last year.
And is your background with the Forest Service?
It is, but my background with the Forest Service is more in recreation, wilderness and trails. And then I needed something to do in the winter, and I found myself ski patrolling and running snow safety programs, and that really opened up avenues for, you know, teaching. And so for the last 20 years or so, I've been into education.
And so there's really a private government partnership going on here. There's the Forest Service that supports the Avalanche Center, but there's the organization that you're also heading up, the Friends of the Panhandle Avalanche Center. Tell us about how they work together.
Correct. It is a Forest Service Avalanche Center, but we need more support than the Forest Service is able to provide. And that's pretty typical for most avalanche centers. So we created a Friends group. I believe it was created in 2011. Our president is Scott Ruhlander, which a lot of you probably know, local videographer, great guy. And our mission with the Friends Group is to support the efforts of the Avalanche Center. So to raise money, raise awareness, help with education. And we've got a fantastic board. We've got a fantastic program that we operate with there. You know, government, we're not really in a position to chase external dollars. So this really gives us an opportunity to look for other funding and to really go out and preach our message.
Now, it seems like the fun side of the work would be to go out and look at snow and put those forecasts together, but maybe that's not so much fun.
It is the fun part. I wish it was the part that we did every day, all day. Yeah. But the reality is it is a lot of office time, you know, putting together these forecasts and looking at weather models and a lot of the background stuff. But really, that is the fun part, and that's where most of our passion is going out into the woods and getting into the snow and looking at these different layers and what they're going to do and how's the weather going to impact it, and then getting that information to the public and letting them know what we're finding.
It is one of those things where the predictive models, you can look at the snowtell sites, the automated weather stations, you can look at forecasts, but without going out and digging a snow pit into the snow, it's really hard to tell what the dynamics are going to be, isn't it?
Correct. Yeah, it really is. And so we look at all of that before we go out. We look at all the snowtell sites. We look at NOAA. We look at Avalanche Canada. There's a lot of models that we pull from. Penn State puts out a lot of good weather models. But then we've got to get out in the field, and we've got to dig, and we've got to look, and we've got to test it. We've got to see, well, how dangerous is this?
And does that mean a lot of tests? Are you in many, many places?
Yes. Usually our day starts off early in the morning, and we hop on snowmobiles, and we'll snowmobile up usually 10 plus miles to an area. And we try to go to places that are pretty indicative of what could be going on throughout maybe a whole mountain range. So we might go up Trestle Creek, and we'll get up as high as we can, usually up around 6,000 feet. And we'll find a place where we can dig on all four aspects, because the wind and sun can affect the snow on different sides. You know, it might be deeper on one side than the other. And so we really try to dig on north, south, east, and west and see what the differences are. And then we also try to dig lower, too, to see if maybe lower elevations are different than higher elevations.
So then all that information goes into forecasting and predicting and good general information for the public to know what they're going to experience when they go out there. And that's what you put out on the website. But beyond that, there's a lot of great information and a lot of great programs that the IPAC does for the public. Why don't we talk a little bit about the resources online, first of all?
Sure. If you go to our website, all of our classes that we do are on there, and we have a variety of classes, everything from Know Before You Go, which is kind of a quick, maybe 1 to 2 hour class where we really kind of hit hard on the basics of of rescue and gear? You know, what do you really want to bring with you when you go out there? What do you need to have in your pack when you go out there and in your brain when you go out there? All the way up to full-blown four-day avalanche level one courses. And we're hosting three of those this year. They are starting to fill up quickly, but if you get on our website, we are putting on three level one classes this year, which is the first time we've done that as a organization. And so we're pretty happy
so
to do it.
Tell us a little bit about what's in a level one class.
A level one class starts off with 8 hours of classroom. And so it's usually broken up into 2 4-hour sessions. And it's PowerPoint sessions. We're going through a lot of different things, rescue, and we're looking at the snowpack. We're teaching terms. We're teaching the anatomy of snow, of avalanches, what different weather phenomena has, like what kind of effect it has on the snowpack. We're really getting into the deeper stuff than you get in a normal avalanche awareness class. And then after that, we have 2 full days in the field where we take the class into the backcountry and we get out in it and we do rescue scenarios and we dig and we practice safe travel techniques and look at the snow crystals through lenses and really analyze what the snow is doing and put the students in a good position that when they complete a level one class that they have a complete understanding of how to look at that snow and make good decisions for them and their parties when they're out recreating.
And so when are those offered and how do people sign up?
If you go to our website, on the main page, there's an education tab. Click on the education tab and you'll see the PayPal tab on there. So we have 3 classes. And those classes are starting off in January. I believe the first one is January 17th through 20. And then there's one that's January 30th through February 3rd. And then there's one that's end of February. I can't think of the dates of that one. But that one is a motorized specific class, which we're really excited about. I mean, up here in the Panhandle, probably our biggest backcountry user is motorized snow bikes and snowmobiles. And so we're excited to kind of tap into that group and work more with that group. And so our 3rd class is going to be strictly motorized. And so for all you snowmobilers out there who want more education, please look into that.
Yes. And the classes will go from, it sounds like, classroom all the way to the outdoors. And will there be simulated rescues?
Yes. Usually our last day of the class, we do mock scenarios where we bury people, we bury beacons, we create it and make it as lifelike as possible. And we throw our students right into the mix and we make them work hard and give pointers. But it's pretty impressive to see what these students can come away with at the end and how good that they can become over our class.
And I think we're missing an important instructor this morning, and it would be a four-footed one. Are dogs included?
Yeah, usually little Avalanche Annie tags along with me, but I must say that her rescue skills are pretty up to par. So it's pretty hard to compete with her. I'd put her nose against anybody's beacon skills.
So for the listeners, tell us a little bit about Annie.
Annie is a little 45-pound yellow lab. She comes from Fort Collins, Colorado, and she was certified. She's 3 years old. She got certified about a year and a half ago, and her job is avalanche rescue. So her, believe it or not, this day and age, the nose of a little avalanche dog is still the best tool we have for finding somebody buried under the snow with no beacon on. I kind of keep waiting for some app to come along to take her job, but so far so good. And it's amazing to see, you know, to use an animal as your tool when you're in the backcountry, and to see how amazing they work and how good that nose really is really an incredible thing.
Yeah, I think the only thing that rivals a dog's nose are maybe the noses of those pigs that hunt out truffles, but the vision of a pig on snow.
Yeah.
the bears are hibernating, but yeah.
And for those of us who've worked with dogs, working dogs before, it really is satisfying, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the motorized users, and there are quite a few of them that get into the backcountry. There's also a program you're engaged with, Idaho Park and Rec?
Yes, we are. We partner with Idaho Park and Rec, and we do at least 10 classes with them everywhere from central Idaho all the way up here to the Panhandle. And most of those are motorized classes.
And those cover just the fundamentals. They're one-day things?
Well, there's most of them are anywhere between 3 hours and 6 hours. And most of them were actually going into the field with those folks.
And you mentioned before, but tell us a little bit more in detail about the Know Before You Go classes, because that sounds like it's for everyone.
Yeah, Know Before You Go is great. And you can actually get on YouTube and search Know Before You Go, and you can watch some of the videos that are out there. But Know Before You Go was created by the Utah Avalanche Center, and it is it's a high-energy, kind of eye-candy type of video that really teaches the basics of avalanche safety and rescue and why we do what we do. And it's a great tool to use for kids. You know, that's where we use it quite a bit, is we go into schools and we'll fill an auditorium with as many kids as we can, and we'll play this video, and it really captures them. And then afterwards we get up and we talk about what we just learned, and we show them the gear that we use and talk about why we do it this way. And it's neat. It's one of those things that once a kid is exposed to it, it kind of becomes the hip thing to do. And that's kind of the basis behind it.
So if you're just tuning in, this is listener-supported community radio for North Idaho, 88.5 KRFY FM. And it's the Tuesday morning show with Phil and Julie. And today our guest is Jeff Thompson from the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center. A good time to be talking about safety in the backcountry in winter. And that's the essence of the talk today. A lot of information on the website, a lot of great programs, and there's a few more yet to go. I'm really interested in, a lot of people listening to us will be interested in, the free Schweitzer Weekly Transceiver Sundays.
Yeah, that's a great thing that Schweitzer Ski Patrol offers. The other hat I wear is a ski patroller up at Schweitzer, so I get to be a part of that as well. But on Sundays, come meet us up at the Sky House. And we take you out for a quick avalanche beacon training class. Actually, sometimes it's not quick. Sometimes we spend a couple hours with these folks. But we bury beacons and we have folks hone their techniques, and we give them as many pointers as we can.
And the fundamentals of how an avalanche beaker transceiver work for people new to the sport.
So an avalanche beacon is one of the primary pieces of gear that you take into the backcountry. Beacon, shovel, probe is what you always hear us preach. You know, you always want to have a beacon, a shovel, and a probe. And a beacon is a device that you wear. It's maybe the size of a cell phone, and you usually wear it on your chest underneath your clothes. And it sends out a signal. And that signal is able to be received by another beacon. So if Phil, if you had a beacon and I had a beacon and you got buried and you're sending off this signal, I could take my beacon and I could switch it over to receive. And I can move down the slope, and it will show me, you know, there's numbers on the screen, and there's also an audio that kind of tells you how you're getting close. But it draws you right in and says, hey, Phil is 1 meter underneath the snow right here. And it sounds pretty easy to use, but really it takes a lot of practice. It takes a lot of practice, and there's a lot of strategy into how to use that. You know, most avalanche victims have a window of about 15 minutes, where if you survive the trauma of the avalanche, you have about 15 minutes of air. And so, you know, time is of the essence. And so someone that can use that beacon quickly, it makes all the difference.
Mm-hmm. There, I think we all probably think about avalanches living in this area, and there must be common misconceptions about avalanches. Are there any you'd like to share?
Well, that's a good point, because here the mountains don't see as much traffic as other mountain ranges in the United States. But these mountains do provide a lot of avalanches, produce a lot of avalanches, and there's a lot of slopes out there that are very capable of getting you into danger. So if you are traveling out there into the mountains here, you're in avalanche country. And, you know, we unfortunately average about one fatality up here in the Panhandle about every other year due to avalanches. Avalanches are the biggest killer on U.S. Forest Service land, believe it or not. When you think about bear attacks, and you think about trees falling on people, and you think about wildfires, it's avalanches that kill more people on federal land, U.S. Forest Service lands, than anything else.
So draw us a picture. You're out skiing in the backcountry, and tell us how you're sizing up the scene, where the threats most likely lie, and what actually happens then during an avalanche.
Well, when you're out in the backcountry, there's a lot of gray area. There's a lot of stuff that it's hard to, you know, there's a lot of gray, but one thing that's not gray is the slope angle. The slope angle is a definitive thing. And so once you get above 30 degrees, you know, between 30 degrees and 38 degrees, that's kind of that prime avalanche slope angle. So if you're on that slope, you're in an area that could slide. Or if you're below that slope, you're in an area where you could be buried. So for example, you might be traveling up a valley on a snowshoe trail or a snowmobile trail and think that you're safe and not realize that 2,000 feet above you is a slope that can produce an avalanche and cross the road that you're on. And so that's one of the things that we really try to drive home in our avalanche classes is identifying those areas and either avoiding them or if you're trying to recreate in them, to do it safely.
And to help me understand angle, too steep and it just, the snow just slides off, too shallow, it's not going to slide.
Exactly. Here with this snowpack, it can stick to steeper slopes than other mountain ranges. You know, you have some mountain ranges where it just sloughs right off, but here it can stick to steeper slopes.
So we know where. So when does an avalanche occur?
Good question. There's a lot of contributing factors to that, but one that really kind of sticks or stands out, I guess, would be after it snows. You know, if we get a big snowstorm for the next 24 hours, it takes a little bit of time for the snow to adjust. You know, when the snow first falls, a lot of times the snow that was there isn't very accepting of the new snow. And so it's a lot more tender. Over the course of 24 to 48 hours, a lot of times it'll start to say, okay, you know, you're sticking around and we'll accept you, and things start to morph together. But right after it snows, which is an obvious answer, but that's a key one.
And Jeff, I know this can cover a 4-day class, but are there any like 3-point easy guidelines for those of us caught unsuspecting in an avalanche? What, I know you can't tell us everything, but are there some easy tips for a person who's looking up and here comes the avalanche? What do we do?
Good question. So if you're caught in an avalanche, well, the first thing that you want to do, and hopefully you did it before you got there, was have a partner. Because if you're by yourself, you're in big trouble. If you're by yourself, I guess the next point would be to do everything you can to get out of it. So you want to get out of your skis, off of your snowboard, off of your sled. A lot of times Mother Nature is going to do that for you. But you can imagine if you're on a set of skis or a snowboard and that slab avalanche just slides over your piece of equipment, you're getting anchored down. You're not getting out of it. You're going to get buried. And I've been on many rescues where that's been the case. But if you can get out of your equipment, then you might have the ability to swim or kick or fight your way towards the top. And the other piece of gear that's become popular in the last maybe decade or so is an avalanche float airbag, where it's an airbag where you pull a rip cord on your shoulder and this big balloon of air blows up kind of above your head or next to your arms. And, you know, it's maybe a meter by a meter. But what that avalanche airbag does is kind of floats you towards the surface, at least in theory. And it works pretty well in certain slide paths to kind of keep you on the surface.
In all, it's better to avoid preparation, scene assessment, and taking positive actions. But if you are caught in the middle of it, I understand that there's a technique to try to swim to stay a little bit on top.
Yeah, exactly. The best thing to do is very similar to what you would do in a river. Keep your feet down, keep your feet up, and try to look at what's below you. I mean, you're going to be going through the washing machine, so it's easy to say that here. But using the backstroke, trying to get to the surface. And then the other thing you can do is you want to get to the flanks of it. You want to get to the sides of it. Try to get out of it. So to kind of log roll your way, you know, towards to the sides. Mm-hmm. You know, that's sort of a technique that professionals preach, that to try to get to the flanks of the avalanche.
Right, because it's the trauma as well as the being buried and not being able to breathe.
Correct. About 50% of the people die from trauma.
And so just simply traveling in the backcountry in an area that might be prone to an avalanche, good to space out members of the party a little bit?
Exactly. We only put one person in harm's way at a time. You know, you can imagine if you're one person looking for seven people that are buried or seven people looking for one person that's buried. It makes a huge difference.
So I'm hearing we're not going to outrun an avalanche. get out of the way. Be prepared. Have a buddy.
You got to have a plan. If you're going into avalanche terrain to ski, snowboard, or snowmobile, and you're knowingly going in there, you got to have a plan. If things go south, what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm. In general, it sounds not unlike a lot of backdoor activities where you want to be prepared. You want to have some knowledge what the threats are. You want to have some folks around you.
Correct. And, you know, looking at the big picture is a huge one. Quick story. Last year, Kevin Davis and I went up Trestle Creek, and we weren't really concerned about avalanches. That day, we were just looking to get some data. We never even left the Groom Trail. And on our way out, we came back, and a pretty sizable avalanche had actually crossed the road that we were traveling on. So if we had been in that area 15 minutes prior, even though we were on a groomed snowmobile trail, it would have been not a good spot to be.
So let's shift a little bit to the snow pit chats, because that sounds like a fun way to find out more about what we've been talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So snow pit chats is something we came up with. We kind of brainstormed that this summer, kind of combining a couple different avalanche awareness series that we had done in the past. And we kind of wanted to breathe kind of a fresh breath into avalanche awareness. So this series, it starts tonight over at McDuff's Beer Hall at 6 p.m. It's going to be our first edition. The way Snow Pit Chats is going to work is we're going to kick it off. IPAC's going to kick it off with, we're going to look at the forecast, we're going to look at the weather, and we're going to give you a quick kind of state of the union, what's going on with the snowpack and the weather. And then we're going to turn it over to a keynote speaker. Tonight we have Mark Yancey from the Boulder Huts. You know, Mark is the owner and operator of the Boulder Hut up in British Columbia. It's a fly in on a helicopter, and then you stay there for a week and ski tour. A really cool operation. And Mark is a professional. He's been doing it for a long time. And so he's going to talk to us about guiding considerations, what he looks at as far as weather and decision making, and then also kind of guiding techniques when it comes to group dynamics. How do you guide a big group of inexperienced folks into the backcountry?
And it looks like there are three other classes.
Chats. Yes.
Yes.
So we have three others. I believe we're doing the first Tuesday of every month. If you get on our website, the dates are on there. But we're doing four this year. And we're trying to add a fifth, which is going to be a motorized specific class. But more details on that once we roll it out. We're going to be at McDuff's and the Alpine Shop. Those are the two venues that we're going to be using this year.
Now, are you bringing McDuff's beer to the Alpine Shop?
the Alpine Shop is going to be serving beer. And I know that Brent over there has this fancy new beer serving deal that he's got going on. So there will definitely be beer.
Not that outdoor education revolves around beer, but it evolves around beer.
It helps pack the room, that's for sure. And pizza, too. We'll have free pizza.
Ooh, even better.
Well, we have lots we could talk about in just a few minutes. Is there anything that we've missed that you'd like to touch on?
You know, the Snow Pit Chats was really the big one that I wanted to touch on tonight. We'd love to have the support. But I guess the last thing would be is, if you get on our Facebook site, we are trying to raise money right now. We're trying to raise $2,000 right now, and we're getting close to $1,000. And what we're going to do with that money is buy avalanche airbags for our forecasters. It's a pretty standard piece of rescue gear for avalanche professionals that we don't have, and we don't have the ability to get right now. And we're trying to raise money to buy avalanche airbags for our forecasters. So if you feel like you can support us, we would much appreciate it.
And so the website's address is, one more time,
IdahoPanhandleAvalanche.org. Or you can find us on Facebook at Friends of Idaho Panhandle Avalanche.
That's a great idea. And as we come to the end of the year, charitable nonprofit giving is important. You never know how it's going to work out next year. So give while it makes a difference.
Yeah, well, thanks for having
us. Yeah, thank you, Jeff.
Okay, well, we're going to take a short musical break here. And then when we come back, we're going to hear from the folks with the Toys for Tots program. Thank you for coming in today, Jeff. Right now, we're going to listen to an old classic. Let's see. Keep talking, Julie.
Sure. Well, I'll just remind everyone that we're beginning our year-end giving campaign here at KRFY. So if you're in a giving mood, you might consider us as well. We'll be talking about that more today. And for those of you just joining us, you are at 88.5 listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. And if you've...
Side. And it is. It's the first real snap of cold weather we've had.
It's a little cold.
Yeah, it's going to get colder, but... it is the season for Christmas and Toys for Tots. And with us in the studio, we have two gentlemen from the Lions Club, Tom Dabrowski and Frank. How do you pronounce your last name?
Visger.
Thank you, Frank. And we're going to talk a little bit about the Lions Club and specifically about the Toys for Tots drive. I always like to start with a little bit of an overview for folks who might be new to the area. Tell us a little bit about the Lions Club, Tom.
Okay. Thank you, Phil. The Lions Club was chartered here in Sandpoint in 1953, and so quite a few years ago. And one of the first things they did is they went down and built a lot of the facilities at City Beach. And so that was a major project. But they also started the Toys for Tots drive here locally. Back in those days, the members would take used toys, rebuild them, repaint them, that kind of thing. And so it was all used, rebuilt toys that they then gave out to local kids.
Tom, was it that long ago, really, in the 50s?
Yes, it was.
Wow.
Yes, it was. And we still have a few of those original members here in town that remember those good old days. Today, however, it's all new toys. And Frank will talk a bit about how people can sign up and where to go to donate. But this is a donation-driven program. The Sandpoint Lions Club is a 501c3 charity, so donations are tax-deductible, and that's how we pay for this program.
And at a lot of places, another organization runs the Toys for Tots program, but here it's the Lions Club. Tell us a little bit about how that came to be.
Yeah, that's correct. It's the Marine League, the Marine Corps veterans that run the Toys for Tots program. And here in Sandpoint, there wasn't a Marine League locally. And so the Sandpoint Lions Club started the program, and it's gone on for many years. The local Marine veterans are a huge asset to the Lions Club. They come out and help unload the food truck. Here in a little bit, we'll unload 8,000 pounds of food. And that's a lot of work, especially for us old fellows. And then the Marine veterans also then help on give out days. They help haul the food and the toys out to the cars.
Let's bring Frank into this conversation. Frank, why don't you tell us a little bit more about how it works these days? And maybe who you need for helpers, if you still need some.
Okay. The sign-ups have started for the 2017 drive. Actually started on November 13th, and they'll go through December 18th. And this is on every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 o'clock until about 4:30. And there's two places you can sign up, either at the Lion's Den, which is down on South Ella next to the museum by the yellow caboose, or you can sign up at Health and Welfare, either place. And I think Health and Welfare would be Monday through Friday, 5 days a week.
And that's the sign-up for the toys or for the food distribution or both?
Both. Both the toys and the food. You do it at the same time. And the actual food and toy distribution will be December 21st and then December 22nd. The first half of the alphabet goes the 21st and the second half goes on the 22nd. But the people that go last, and I feel for them because my last name starts with V, so you're always, you know, in the last half.
Yeah. Yeah. They should mix it up and do a reverse alphabet some year.
Well, actually, they do. They flip-flop every year. This year happens to be the year that's on the regular. A through J goes first. But anyway, they reserve toys we try to buy two of each at least, multiples of two, and they reserve the toys and, of course, the food. So the second day, people don't get, you know, shorted as far as the selection.
And they is the parents who reserves the toys.
Correct.
Yeah, the parents actually pick out the toys. The children don't. And the parents are given 50 points we assign a point value to each toy based on its price. And the parent is given 50 points for each child. And so they go through and they're assigned, we have what we call a toy room in the back, and then they're assigned a personal shopper who is a Lions Club member. and then they go through with a personal shopper and work their way up to their 50 points per child.
And it all sounds so simple and straightforward, but tell us about the volume that's being dealt with here.
Well, as the toy buyer, I have the fun of having to go out and buy the toys. Our budget this year was $30,000 for toys.
My.
Wow. And this Thursday night at Walmart at 6 o'clock, there will be a whole bunch of Lions and volunteers going out and doing a toy buy at Walmart, and where we get a significant number of toys. But all told, we give out about 10,000 toys each year.
Tom, just explain to us why you've chosen Walmart, because we're such a local community, and yet I know you, the Lions, made this decision consciously.
And that was a decision that was made some time ago, and it's primarily due to volume. We get tremendous support from other local retailers like North 40. They're great to work with. They give us a significant discount. Frankly, we like to have people donate money, and the reason for that is we can get more toys per dollar than someone else can just going in and buying them in a local store, because the people like the Walmarts and the North 40s and other local vendors give the Lions Club a deal. That way we can stretch our dollars, get more toys, and because it takes quite a bit of money to buy and distribute 10,000 toys.
And I think that's a really important thing to hone in on here. It's not just that it's $30,000 worth of toys. It's $30,000 worth of discounted toys. So more than you might buy as a retail at a retail outlet if you just walked in.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
Really just doing the most for the...
Yes. Then the other thing we do is we buy food, and we provide a food box for people that would like it. And what we found is that many people that need toys also need food at Christmas time. And so last year we fed about 1,600 people during the holidays.
Please don't tell me ladies are fixing all that, or men, people. Are Lions fixing all of the food, or are you purchasing it?
Frank was our food buyer and got the food from one of our local supermarkets, Yolks, and great folks to work with. And what we do is we put together food boxes. We have boxing night, and Phil's participated in that in the past. It's a lot of fun, but we box up about 500 boxes of food and get all of that. That's 8,000 pounds of food, by the way.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great upper body workout, helping put the boxes together.
Yes, it is.
But none of the food is prepared in advance.
No. Yeah. I hope there's a flow chart or something for what's going in each box. I would think that would get rather confusing.
That's Tom's baby. I think he's a master tactician. It operates a lot like a theater of war. The supply side of going to war is very complex.
Mm-hmm, it is. But Frank is in charge of Toys for Tots, and he has a great book that he's put together about how this process works and what the flow is. So we have lots of different members with lots of different skills, and fortunately Frank's a really well-organized guy, and he has this thing running like clockwork.
And I think we should just mention who isn't here this morning, who is scheduled to be here and has a big part in this event.
Well, that's my wife Judy, who's our president. Frank, by the way, is first vice president. Next July he'll take over as president of the Lions. But a couple of weeks ago, I came down with a cold and laryngitis. Judy said the laryngitis didn't last long enough because I couldn't talk during that time. But anyway, she has it now, so she asked me to step in for her today.
Now, I think one of the remarkable things is that all of this is done, and the rest of the programs throughout the year, the 4th of July parades and the fireworks, with actually a fairly small number of volunteers from the Lions Club. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's the Lions Club only has about 20, 25 active members, and we basically put all that on by ourselves. Again, on Toys for Tots especially, we do ask for help from the community, specifically the fire department, police department, and anybody really that wants to come down, especially on food delivery day and boxing night, like Tom talked about, we can certainly use help there.
Mm-hmm. And who should somebody get a hold of to find out more about how to volunteer?
I'd say contact Frank.
Yeah, you can get a hold of me. My phone number is 208-627-2932. And they can call me and we can certainly set something up. Or if they want to come by the den during the sign-up hours, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, again from 8 to 4:30, I'm sure they could talk to somebody there also. Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you could really use a few people for this event. It would be helpful.
It's, as I said, this thing has been distilled down to the essence of super juice over the years to where we've figured out how to do it as efficiently as possible. And we have great help from the Marines, and we have great help from the Sandpoint Police Department. When those 8,000 pounds of food have to be unloaded, the policemen are there, and they do most of that. So,
so I can mark my own calendar and encourage others. What night is Boxing Night?
Boxing Night is December 20th, starting at 6 p.m. at the Lion's Den, again, down by the museum. And it'll probably last 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you can put me down.
All right.
Very nice.
And hopefully your better half.
I try not to speak for her. She would wish I had laryngitis. But if she's listening, I'm sure she would agree to it.
Yes.
Well, at least we've gotten you one volunteer and possibly two volunteers for the event.
Yep. Well, we really appreciate the opportunity to tell people about it. And, of course, the other thing we need are donations. Donations can be mailed in P.O. Box 414, Sandpoint Lions Club. Donations can be dropped off at the front office of the Daily Bee. And donations can also be dropped off at Columbia Bank downtown here in Sandpoint or out in Ponderé. And it's the donations that make this program work. We set a target of $50,000, and that pays for the toys, pays for the food, and then it pays for other costs that we have, and that pretty much covers the program.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It seems like the community steps up every year and you hit that target.
It's very impressive. As we've talked before, this is a very giving community. And the folks that get the toys and the food are people that truly need help. It's very gratifying to see that our community steps up to help these folks. And some of the stories we hear are just heartrending at this time of the year.
There was an auction last week at Old Red's Pub. Are there any more events planned coming up, or are we shifting now to the sign up and get ready season?
No, we do have a spaghetti feed that's being put on by the Hoot Owl. And that will be on December 15th from 4 to 7. And they're very generously donating all the proceeds, Wendy is, from that feed to the Toys for Tots. We also have, for people that want to, you know, make smaller donations or something more informal, we have coin jars throughout. I'm not going to list all the businesses, but I'd say we're up in the neighborhood of probably close to 70, 75 businesses that, you know, where you can just leave change or whatever. Mm-hmm. And also, we do have a number of those businesses also that do have toy boxes. I know Tom said we'd just soon buy our own, but we'll take other ones.
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of that, we want to certainly give credit to the local UPS people, because Sunday they set up at Walmart, and we're still organizing and sorting the amount of toys they had, but I'm going to say probably at least, a couple of hundred?
A couple of hundred.
Yeah, a couple of hundred. Yeah,
plus, very impressive.
Yeah, and they collected $342 in cash for the drive.
So excellent.
We really appreciate that from the local UPS people.
Well, yeah. We appreciate you both coming in today. We're running a little bit out of time. Are there any last things that we missed that you want to bring up?
I don't think so.
So yeah, find a retailer near you with the coin jar or send a check in.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, and I'd just like to thank the Lions for volunteering and helping with such uplifting causes. Toys for Tots, toys and fireworks. Lions are making this community fun. Thank you, Tom. And thank you, Lions.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you both. Harry Connick Jr., Little Drummer Boy. What more could speak to Christmas than that?
Don't know. Wish I had a set of timpanis in my living room after hearing that.
Well, once again, it seems like the hour has slid by us very quickly with a couple of great interviews, a lot of good information about upcoming safety tips for avalanche outings or outings into avalanche territory, and of course, the Toys for Tots.
They go quickly, don't they, Phil?
Yeah, they do. Thank you for joining the morning show. If you are a morning show fan, here's what's coming up this week on Wednesday, December 6th. Join morning show host Chris Bessler and Susie Perez. KRFI is reaching out to the station's listener this week for an end-of-the-year donation. And a reminder to join, become a member. Various business underwriters will be stopping by tomorrow. That's right here at 8 a.m. On Thursday morning, hosts Jim Healy and Jack Peterson will be taking a good look at the very entertaining and informative 88.5 KRFY program schedule with descriptions and highlights, a little bit more about what the station does and when we do it and how we do it.
And next Tuesday, we'll be talking with local adventurers about their local adventures. Some hikers will be joining us, talking about a day where they bagged three peaks, and there may be a mystery guest in addition. So look forward to next Tuesday with Phil and me.
And so this month, December, like all nonprofits, is an important month to us here at KRFY. It takes a community of listener supporters to keep Panhandle Community Radio at 88.5 KRFY on the air viable and an ongoing concern. So to donate or become a new member, you can renew your membership or donate or become a new member by going to our website, krfy.org, using the donate button. You can stop by the station and say hi and make a donation, or you can call and leave a message at 208-265-2992.
That's correct. It is sort of the month of giving, especially for the nonprofits, and there are lots of fun ways you can do that. Tomorrow night, the 6th, you can join Friends of Scotchman Peak Wilderness at for the benefit at Baxter's. That's the Baxter's on Cedar. That's all day, really, from 11 a.m. until 9 p.m. The Friends of Scotchman staff will be on hand and will offer information materials, and you will also be able to buy raffle tickets. So have a meal, buy a raffle ticket, learn about Friends of Scotchman's Peak.
Lots of stuff. What else is happening this week?
Well, also on the 6th, after you've finished up at Baxter's, you can run over to the Panada and watch and listen to Last Stand, The Vanishing Caribou Rainforest. That's at the Panada. That will be playing at 6 p.m., and you can go to panada.org in order to get tickets or get more information. Also, on the 7th, that would be Thursday, you might ask yourself, is a small farm in your future? If so, the Bonner County Extension Office is hosting a small farm workshop from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m., and you can get more information about that by calling 208-263-8511. More? Sure. On the 9th, if you're a writer interested in local authors, Lost Horse Press with Sandpoint Parks and Rec are presenting the Winter Salon. It's lectures, readings, and book signings featuring David Axelrod, Melissa Kwanzi, and Christopher Howell. And that'll be Saturday starting at 10 a.m. And Phil, my printer's run out of ink. I can't read how you would contact anyone on that. Sorry, folks. Well, You'll have to go to online.
As with all of our events, there's details at Sandpoint Online, where we get a lot of our calendar information from, a great source for local events, activities, classes, anything going on really in our community. And there's always, it seems, year-round, a ton of stuff, especially on weekends.
And I do have one last one. On the 10th, you might find you have time for the Human Rights Day celebration. That's Bonner County Human Rights Task Force. That's 11:30 to 1:30. You can find out more about that by going to Sandpoint Online.
So it ran out there again, too.
Apparently so. Sorry.
And if you have time, this evening, as we heard earlier, join the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center folks at McDuff's Beer Hall for a conversation with Mark Yancey, owner and operator of Boulder Hut Adventures, learn a little bit more about avalanche safety. It's really important to, as the title of one of their classes is, know before you go, because otherwise the backcountry can be full of surprises, and you don't want to get surprised in the winter.
It's convinced me.
Yeah, I think boater safety, avalanche safety, hiking safety, they all share a lot of common threads, and that's preparation. You need to think about what you're doing beforehand. You need to go with folks who also know what to do at any given situation to help mitigate the risk and get you out of it when you do have a problem. So we've got a couple of things queued up here. A little bit of Fleetwood Mac, Landslide, which reminds us of avalanches and what to do. Whether it's snow coming down the hillside or mud coming down the hillside, you want to get out of the way, swim to the top, have a companion who can help find you.
Seems the precaution.